To cross over to Lebanon, I believe that we're going to be joining the speech by the head of the Secretary General of Hezbollah, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah. Let's listen up.
The resistance is a culture. The true nature of the resistance, the depth of the resistance, is a culture. The jihadist duty, jihadist action, military acts, or standing firm, the people standing with steadfastness on their territory, remaining, being patient and putting up with the repercussions, making sacrifices, this all reflects the culture. It personifies the culture. If this culture did not exist, then we would not have seen all of these achievements, sacrifice, etc. All forms of resistance are a result of the culture of the resistance, and the depth of the resistance is its culture. Some in Lebanon say, and also in the Arab world, but let's speak about Lebanon. Some people in Lebanon are discussing or saying, not now, the argument regarding the resistance has nothing to do with entering Syria or 2006 or the 1982 events, if we go back step by step, or 1978 or the beginning of the 70s when the Palestinian resistance factions came to Lebanon. No. Ever since the founding of the Zionist entity in the region, in Palestine, there has been an argument about their resistance, and there is a disagreement about understanding the enemy, identifying the enemy, and the alternatives to confront the enemy. This is not a new debate. And this has nothing to do with a party, nor with a movement, nor with a leader, nor with a person, nor with any leader or organization or religious sect or group or a specific region. No. This debate began before Imam Musa Sadr and after Imam Sayyid Musa Sadr, before the resistance of Amal al-Hezbollah and after the resistance of Amal al-Hezbollah came into existence. When the main issue for the resistance was the national secular parties, this debate existed at that time when the national secular parties were practicing resistance. So nobody should make a mistake and say we are debating, there was a national debate and discussion in Lebanon because of the performance of the current resistance. No, this debate was there from the beginning, from 1948. And so I always told those who criticize us, they say, for example, that the resistance has lost Lebanese consensus. And I always responded by saying there was never a complete Lebanese consensus in support of resistance in Lebanon, never. Even on the eve of May 2000, even at the time, at the best period, at the time of victories, at the time where the resistance gave its victory as a gift to all the Lebanese, there was never a national consensus regarding the resistance. This is misleading, it's not true. And so some people say that we today have a problem with the resistance because it has an Islamic nature or because the resistance fighters are Shia. But when the resistance fighters were from different sects, did you support their resistance? When the resistance nature, the nature of the resistance was nationalist, secular groups, did you support their resistance? This is a big mistake which exists today. However, the young generations who never followed what took place back then might be tricked by such a narrative, and they might say that your intervention in Syria or your political stance in this year or that year or towards this cause has ended the national consensus in support of the resistance. Today, I want to stress that those who debated and who still make this argument regarding the option of resistance, some of them know, some of them don't know.
Well, we have been watching the speech taking place in Beirut by the Secretary General of the resistance group Hezbollah, Sayed Hassan Nasrallah. We have had some technical difficulties. We've lost that signal. Hopefully, we'll be rejoining it as soon as it can be reestablished. Basically, he is addressing the Lebanese, and there's lots of talk inside of Lebanon itself right now about the tactics that the resistance are using, if they should be directly involved in Syria or not. And he's saying basically all of this is coming from a culture that existed a long time before, a culture that is anti-resistance, that it has nothing to do with this resistance group being religious or being Shia. It is just being a resistance group that has existed ever since the existence of what he called the Zionist entity in 1948. This has always been the case, that there have been those who were against resistance. Well, hopefully it will be able to rejoin his speech that is taking place live right now in Lebanon. For now, though, we will continue with the news. A new phase of violations of Rohingya Muslims' rights in Myanmar. The government says it will not register Muslims identifying themselves as Rohingya in its census. Now, a government spokesman says Rohingyas can call themselves Bengali as they register for the first census in 30 years. Buddhists in Western states say that they will boycott the census over fears that it could lead to the official recognition of Rohingyas. Muslims in parts of the unrest-hit Rakhine state have complained that authorities have threatened them with harsh penalties if they identify themselves as Rohingyas, despite the UN assurances the country's first UN-backed census will last 12 days. We're going to cross back over to Lebanon. We have reestablished a connection. Let's listen up.
About what the security services were subject to in the border areas, and also the humiliation of the states. They don't know anything about the violation of our air, land and sea. And one day, even on the table of national dialogue, when we used to meet in the cabinet, some of those who used to participate, not one of them, some of them, a group, more than one, they said, no, before the Palestinians came to Lebanon, there was no problem. There was no problem with Israel back then. I'm not here criticizing people out of nothing. This is all recorded. It took place in the cabinet. There was no problem. That's what they used to say.
وأنا أريد أن أكون شريكا في صنع حاضر ومستقبل لبنانيين وهو يجهل تاريخ منطقة أساسية من لبنان تاريخ قبل سنوات لا يعرف شيئا
But they don't know the history of the Lebanon. They don't know this history. And then this person had to go out of the session and he said, look, we began 1948. And some of them, their faces changed. So there are historic documents. So do you need us to send you, make you visit the graves or bring you some of the elderly so that they can bear witness to what Israel did before? This resistance, as we believe in it, this resistance began at that time. At that time with the available tools, available capabilities, the inhabitants of this mountain, their main role was to stay in territories, in their territory. They stayed in the territory to guard their fields, to guard their farms and gardens, and they guarded them, and also to be killed under the roofs of their homes and not to leave their territories. And they were indeed killed under the roofs of their houses. This was the resistance which was available at that time. The resistance of the stance of refusal, the resistance of Imam Musa Sadr, who forbade any sick person to buy medicine from the Israeli side, the resistance which preferred death, dying of disease, than buying medicine and being cured by the Israelis. This resistance, this kind of resistance, existed before any movement, the resistance of the people. The resistance represents all homes and all houses in these villages and the border areas in the south. It is every mosque which remained, every church, it is every olive tree and the tobacco plants, although this is usually a specialty of Parliament Speaker Birri. It is every olive tree, every tobacco plant, it is every suburb in the south which still stands on its own two feet, and every grave, it is every poem, every tear, every smile, every wound, every blood, every drop of blood, every bullet. It is this perseverance, this steadfastness, this determination. It is in Jabal Amel. It is the wind and the water and the territory, the land, the valleys, the mountains, the people who didn't leave this area for the occupation and who will never leave this land. This is the resistance. And together with the resistance, all those who believed in it and supported it and bared patience with it and paid the price with blood along with the resistance, like our people in the Biqar and all places throughout Lebanon, and also along with the different resistance parties and the generations of resistance, this reflects this fact. And so he who wages a battle today, he who wages any battle today, of course, you know, a cabinet has been formed today. We are sitting with each other, and the cabinet is once again functioning, thank God, and the joint parliamentary factions are in function, and the parliamentarians meet each other and joke with each other and speak with each other and laugh with each other. But regardless, the media outlets of the opposing side and their newspapers, their television stations, their speakers, it's as if we're still in the previous period. And the focus on the issue of the resistance. Do you have a problem with the party? Then speak about Hezbollah. You have a problem with the Amal movement, criticize the Amal movement. If you have a problem with a specific organization, criticize it. But the issue of resistance is higher and more sacred, more deep than a problem with a specific party. Some people realize where they are targeting. They know where they want to target, because deep down their problem is with the resistance, not with this movement or that group, but they take advantage of it to target. The resistance, as I said, reflects all of this, and so any stabbing of the resistance or any description which is insulting to the resistance is like stabbing and insulting everyone who is with the resistance, who's part of resistance and is with the resistance, not just one specific group. This has repercussions which will become clear in days. The talk about the failure of the three-way equation, maybe some people could jump to conclusions, but what is your evidence? Give me facts. Where did the three-way equation fail? The three-way equation meaning the army, people and resistance defending Lebanon. We're not holding on to sentences. Of course, it's good the Arab language saved Lebanon from the problem. If we speak about the Arab language, we were able to find an exit because of the Arab language, but in depth, regardless of the terms, where did this three-way equation fail? Where did this three-way equation achieve victory? Where was it successful? And allow me to ask, where did you succeed? You who speak about the failure of the three-way equation of army, people and resistance. This equation succeeded in liberating the territories. At the same time, the whole world failed in liberating these territories, including diplomatic means and the state. The resistance succeeded in retrieving the prisoners. The resistance, along with the army and the people, also succeeded and has succeeded up until now in protecting Lebanon and protecting the south and protecting the border areas and the frontline villages right on the border. The three-way equation imposed Lebanon as a very strong player in the region in general. Nobody, when they think about the region now, nobody can neglect Lebanon or ignore Lebanon, because in Lebanon we have a treasure which comes before oil or gas. The three-way equation imposed Lebanon as a very strong player in the region in general. Nobody, when they think about the region now, nobody can neglect Lebanon or ignore Lebanon, because in Lebanon we have a treasure which comes before oil or gas. This is a big achievement for the three-way equation and for the rib of the three-way equation, which hasn't been broken and will not be broken, God willing. These are the achievements. Where are your achievements, meaning the March 14 movement? Where are your achievements? That's enough. I just... That question will do, because I'm saying we want to settle, calm things down, so I don't want to bring about or ignite a problem. But when we speak about building a state, about the debt, about projects, when we speak about all this, tell me, where are your achievements? And in this perspective, I'd also like to stress to you on this occasion, and in light of everything which was raised and everything which we heard over the last few months regarding the resistance and Israel and the talk about the war and dangers and threats and taking advantage of opportunities, etc., this resistance will remain solid. It is solid now. It will remain as such. It will remain with its head hung high, protecting its people and its nation and its inhabitants, and will preserve and maintain its previous achievements, including the rules of engagement, which are a result of the April Understanding 1996, until the achievements of 2006. And because of deterrence, our villages will remain secure and our farms will continue to function. And I once again assure you, this is not a subject of concern whatsoever, the possibility of war. And if anyone is trying to terrorize the country, saying that, for example, because of the fighting in Syria and because of the fact that some of these fighters are preoccupied in the fight in Syria, and hence this might open the door and the horizon for the Israelis to settle scores with Lebanon or to wage war against Lebanon, these are not correct calculations. The Israelis, when they decide a war, there are different calculations and different perspectives they must bear in mind, and all of these calculations now don't reach the decision to go to war. The most important aspect here is that the Israelis are well aware that this resistance is strong and has become stronger. Now, from the outside, some people say that you have martyrs here or there and that you're being exhausted, but this was always the case with their resistance. The resistance gains strength with time, and the more sacrifices, the more strength, the more strong it got with giving. And so this is not weakness, it is a source of strength. So here, from the village of Ainata, from the liberated border areas, from inside the borders here, or from this area, I want to assure you, the resistance today is not just strong, but compared to what it was in July 2006, the resistance is stronger and more capable at all levels, the humanitarian level and the military level, and also more ready to bring about a victory, God willing. We don't want war, we're not looking for a war, and our strategy as a resistance is not an open-ended war, and this is something well known. However, if anyone thinks, any one of those Zionists, if they think of waging a war or launching a war against Lebanon, if in someone's heart, in someone's mind, in some village, in some house, if someone anywhere is afraid or concerned in this perspective, I'd like to tell you and assure you the case is not as such. And unfortunately, the Israelis are more aware of the Lebanese regarding the increasing growth of the capabilities and strength of the resistance. And this is something which impacts their calculations. I want to focus on this. And before I go to the last part, allow me, because it's the first time I'm speaking for 1.5 months, I'd like to say that the treasure will remain treasure. Gold will remain gold. If you have gold in front of you, and if someone has changed his mind and says, for example, this is tin, does this mean the gold has turned into tin? Or this is metal, does it mean the gold has turned into metal? Or they said this is wood, does it mean the gold has turned into wood? No. The description of others doesn't change the true nature of things. How people describe certain things doesn't change their true nature. This is a rule, philosophically. It's a natural rule. And even more, what is very strange today, due to the economic situation in the world, if anyone has money, what's he doing? He's converting it into gold, because gold is rising in value. Day by day, gold is rising in value. Today, any country in the world, a few days ago, a very rich country, a oil country which has huge surplus, which doesn't have any debt, it bought billions of dollars worth of gold. If someone today wants a guarantee for his cash, the guarantee is no longer the dollar, nor the euro, nor any currency. The real guarantee today is gold. And in Lebanon, we have gold which has no partner whatsoever. And gold which is unique for Lebanon only. How can people allow themselves to abandon and give up this gold? But would the people, the Lebanese people, have been able to create coffins for the occupant soldiers, for the soldiers of the occupation who entered Lebanon vertically but left horizontally? And this wood will still exist for the coffins of any invader for this sacred, blessed land. No, we have no problem with wood. Everything has its value and its role. Now, the last topic I'd like to conclude with, we've taken your time. Regarding the national dialogue sessions, I don't want to declare a stance, but this understanding, this way of thinking will have an impact on the decision which will be taken by Hezbollah regarding participating or not participating in the table of national dialogue, and also it will, of course, our partners, our allies, have the freedom to take the decision which they find suitable when it comes to participating on the table of national dialogue. Our stance is not obligatory. It doesn't mean that our allies should follow suit. There might be differences in these issues. This is natural. The last topic which I'd like to mention is that today, this campaign targeting the resistance in Lebanon, this campaign is focusing on a main point, which is entering into Syria. And they say you entered into Syria, and because of that, the national consensus has stopped. You entered into Syria, that means the role of Hezbollah's weapons has changed. It's no longer weapons for resistance. But did you have weapons of resistance? Did you consider it weapons of resistance before? Anyway, this is being said today. And this issue is considered a fundamental problem which is raised consistently It has been raised recently and it's being raised every day. This is preoccupying the country and all of us, and so I'd like to comment on this issue in the last part of my speech. From the beginning, look, the problem with us was the opposing side in Lebanon and the governments and regimes in the Arab world and the governments. Regarding the Syrian issue, our stance is political, not our military issue. Our military intervention came late, and as we said, it came after all other sides intervened, after all other sides came, after all other sides fought. We came very late. The problem was our political stance, because from the very beginning, we said that we do not support this conflict in Syria. We don't support the toppling of the government or the toppling of the state. We support reforms. We support the political solution. We support the political dialogue. We support achieving and fulfilling the demands which your people are demanding, but we do not support anyone in Syria going to break the country and destroy it and sabotage it and imposing strategic decisions or alternatives and options on this country. This is where the issue lies. Before reforms, it was about the strategic choices, strategic options. We took this stance, but there were many who were going with the other stance. They wanted us to be with the opposing side, to be part of it. Because we weren't part of this opposing side, then the war also targeted us. So in depth, it's related to our political stance, not our military intervention. There is something big taking place in the region, and you must be part of what is taking place, part of this campaign, or else prepare yourself for being executed, for execution. This was the campaign. The aim was for all of us to bow down to it, or to give in to it. At the very least, to give in, to bow down to this campaign. We didn't become part of this campaign, we didn't go along with it, and we didn't bow down to it, because we considered that this campaign poses a strategic existential threat regarding Syria, Lebanon, and the Palestine. And this is something which we explained before. We explained it enough, and so I don't want to repeat. And so we took this political stance. Now, as time went by, as time passed, our stance developed. We went to the battlefield. Now I'll take a few more minutes. All Lebanese know we said this on the media, and some people also criticized us because of these details. Our first limited military intervention, which included tens of Hezbollah fighters only, this intervention came when our brothers went to western Ghouta, to the village of Sayyida Zainab, may peace be upon her, about 1.5 years ago or more. When most of the western Ghouta was controlled by the armed groups, most of it, not all of it, and when the armed groups were just 200 meters away from the Sayyida Zainab shrine, may peace be upon her, and when we believe that this shrine, because of its religious importance for all Muslims, and also because destroying this shrine will lay the foundation or ignite a sectarian conflict in more than one place in the Islamic world, because of that we said, let's go and help. At that place, we had the Syrian army, we had national defense committees, the people of the village. We sent tens of individuals to assist in defending the shrine. That's it. Now, this stance was subject to criticism. Today, there is a country which considers itself a great country, a country in the NATO, which is struggling in order to become part, which is fighting to become part of the EU. Some people, I mean Turkey here. The first letter is Turkey. Turkey. Today, the Turkish government sits down and discusses, and it says we have a grave or a shrine for the grandfather, great-grandfather of Bani Uthman. And today, if you ask all Muslim people what's his name, they don't know. I don't know his name. I read his name, but I wasn't able to memorize it. And I didn't have time to bring the name with me. Who knows him in the Islamic world? What does he mean to Muslims? What does he mean when it comes to the Muslims, whether they be Shia or Sunni? But irrespective, Turkey says it has the right to think of intervening militarily and of violating the sovereignty of Syria and planning. Why? Because it's possible that the ISIL, Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, could come and destroy this shrine. So why? We're speaking now philosophy and literature. Why is it allowed for you, not allowed for us? Criticism. Today there is a country which considers itself a great country, a country in the NATO, which is struggling in order to become part, which is fighting to become part of the EU. Some people, I mean Turkey here, the first letter is Turkey. Turkey. Today, the Turkish government sits down and discusses, and it says we have a grave or a shrine for the grandfather, great-grandfather of Bani Uthman. And today, if you ask all Muslim people what's his name, they don't know. I don't know his name. I read his name, but I wasn't able to memorize it. And I didn't have time to bring the name with me. Who knows him in the Islamic world? What does he mean to Muslims? What does he mean when it comes to the Muslims, whether they be Shia or Sunni? But irrespective, Turkey says it has the right to think of intervening militarily and of violating the sovereignty of Syria and planning. Why? Because it's possible that the ISIL, Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, could come and destroy this shrine. So why? We're speaking now philosophy and literature. Why is it allowed for you, not allowed for us? We went in order to defend a shrine respected by all Muslims and to defend a person respected and glorified by all Muslims, because she's the granddaughter of the Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him. So who is he, this person who you want to wage a regional war for? You're coming to wage a regional war. And here there was a real danger for Sayyidah Zainab's shrine. There's no danger. And even more, we didn't violate Syria's sovereignty. It's not me, President Bashar al-Assad spoke about this previously, because some people asked. He said no, the resistance entered into Syria with the agreement of a Syrian government. Some say we violated Lebanese sovereignty. Okay, that's up for debate. But at least we didn't violate Syrian sovereignty. Now today, a country, member of the NATO, which is a candidate for being a member of the EU, is preparing for a war and regional intervention directly in Syria under the excuse that there is a shrine for the great-grandfather of Bani Uthman of the Ottoman rule, of the Ottomanic rule, which is threatened. This shrine is being threatened. And maybe they may even call on the ISIL to destroy this shrine. Only God knows. Anyway, then we saw Qusayr, and after the Qusayr, we saw what happened in all those areas until we reached the stage whereby, no, it became clear that the confrontation or the battle in Syria has reached a stage because of the size of the international and regional intervention and because of the tens of thousands of fighters who came from all over the world to Syria. Now, very frankly, and I once again repeat, it's no longer the case of the shrine of Sayyidah Zainab or the Lebanese who live in Syrian territory or who live in Syria. Ever since then, it has become the issue of resistance, the axis of resistance, the future of resistance, the political identity of the region where we headed to. We mentioned all of these issues. Why am I repeating them? Not only to take time in order to speak about the results now. Now, what stage have we reached? Where are we now? From the beginning, We said we want a political solution. The Arab League said it wanted to topple the regime or the government. It said it doesn't agree to any dialogue, political dialogue, before the government of Assad leaves power. After 3 years, you saw the latest resolutions of the Arab League. Did we need 3 years for this to happen? 3 years of war and killings and battles and destruction and sabotage and sedition. Did it take 3 years for the Arabs to say what they should have said from the beginning? For the Arabs to go along, go and walk on the path which they should have walked on from the beginning? Now they're saying, we want to put pressure on President Assad and the government. We want to hold a national dialogue. Geneva too didn't work or isn't working. Now, at the beginning, when we said, let's go ahead with dialogue and the Syrian leadership is ready to go ahead with fundamental reforms, none of you was ready to even discuss the idea of a political solution or of political dialogue. You said in only 2 or 3 months everything will change in Syria and in the region. We told you let's have a political solution and you went to the military solution. Now you've reached the conclusion which we said, which we spoke to you about before. I'm here talking to the Arabs, the opposing side in Lebanon and the countries who are still intervening in this crisis. We said from the beginning that what's going on in Syria will put all the region in danger under the threat of terrorism and takfiris. You said, no, it's not like that in Syria. It's about democracy, human rights, change. Now, what is the reality on the ground, which you yourselves are speaking about? Now, after 3 years have passed, you are speaking about Syria, which is being controlled by the in the areas where the armed groups have control. You say that these areas where the armed groups have control pose a threat to regional countries and the countries of the world. Now, after 3 years have passed, after 3 years of your financing, after 3 years of your armament, after 3 years of your incitement, after 3 years of your pushing towards military solutions, after you sabotage any political solutions, and after 3 years of your protection of the armed groups, now you are putting together a terrorist list and you have placed most of these armed groups on your terrorist lists. What remains, regardless of our stance towards this list, but when you say that in Syria, the ISIL and al-Nusra and the Muslim Brotherhood, when you say that these groups are terrorists, what remains? Who's left? Very frankly. Now, did it need 3 years for the region and the world to discover that what's taking place in Syria will lead to such results? And of course, there are some Lebanese who haven't discovered until now. Until now, they haven't discovered that what's going on in Syria poses a threat to Lebanon. The Americans, who are far, far away, the French and the Europeans and some Gulf countries, the countries of North Africa, consider Syria, the areas in Syria which are controlled by their armed groups, as a source of threat, a source of danger for their security. And even in certain areas where there were no calls for jihad, now Tunisia, look at Tunisia. Unfortunately, some people in Lebanon still say that what's going on in Syria doesn't pose a threat to Lebanon. We told you from the beginning that what's going on in Syria is not just about, it's no longer about reforms and democracy. The armed takfiris who don't accept anyone else, even those who belong to the Takfiri fighting school. And we're seeing this now, the fighting between the ISIL and al-Nusra. They belong to the same school of thought, the same way of thinking, the same Amir, and the same political project. But disagreement between them is an organizational disagreement, just like we see in any party. Is this person, for example, the in charge or that person? The issue is that should the leader be Mr. Julani or Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi? Who paid the price? Thousands of victims. Thousands of victims. Immense destruction. Brutal confrontations because of such a small disagreement. How can these people live with all of the Lebanese, with the Lebanese, with the other Syrians, with the other people in the region? So if your brothers, if your beloved, if your allies, I'm going to say, I'm not going to say your masters, this, I'm going to say your allies. If they've discovered that this is the reality of the situation, why haven't you realized this yet? Why haven't you realized the same thing? Stubbornness is good, but on the condition that this stubbornness doesn't come on the account of Lebanon and its future. We were always told, since about 1.5 years, it's still being said today by some political sides, they call on Hezbollah to leave, exit Syria. I don't want to defend today. Today, I want to request from you, change your stance, reconsider your stance, re-evaluate your stance. Make a new reading. I'm not going to tell you, come and fight with us in Syria. No, that's not requested. No, that's unwarranted. And actually, there are some groups, there are some Lebanese groups from different religious sects who propose to us, and maybe this is the first time I say this, they propose to us to go and fight with us where we fight. However, we said there's no need. Don't take this political burden or this social burden. We've taken this burden and we're continuing. Those who insist every day and say that the problem in Lebanon is that Hezbollah went to Syria. I say that the problem in Lebanon is that Hezbollah was late to go to Syria. And the problem in Lebanon is that you are still in your places and you haven't went to Syria. If some of you go to the wrong place, anyway, I'm not going to tell you go to Syria or fight with us. What I will tell you, reconsider your stance, because day by day it's being proven that the choices which we made were right, were the right choices. And I'd also like to say, maybe also for the first time, with this openness, if the Takfiri terrorists had achieved victory in Syria, I tell all Lebanese, all political factions and parties, March 8, March 14, those in the middle, left and right, I tell all of them, if the Takfiri terrorism had achieved victory in Syria, we would all be eliminated, not the party, not the resistance, we would all be eliminated. We would all be eliminated. Look at what's going on in Idlib and in Dukkah and in Deir ez-Zor and in Fallujah and in Anbar. Ask. Ask. Not the secular people. Ask the Islamic parties, the Muslims. Ask them what happened to them in those areas. And if the Takfiri terrorist movement is defeated in Syria, I tell you, we will all remain. We will all remain in existence. If this axis achieves victory in Syria, all Lebanese will continue to exist. This axis is not looking for revenge. It's looking for peace. It's looking for coexistence. It's looking for strength. It's not looking for revenge. And here, there are very big national decisions. Let's come and choose the decisions. And so, after all what I said, of course, we're not making a lot of television interviews, as you can see. There are members of Hezbollah, our brothers have many speeches, but we don't want to go very much deep into this argument. Today, Lebanon has an opportunity. This government was formed irrespective of the conditions which led to its formation. This is a chance. We call for enhancing the performance and the functioning of the government. We will be positive and we will contribute to the functioning of the government, the security issues which are a priority in all different areas, especially in the north and in the Bekaa, first and foremost. We must cooperate cooperate in order to address the social, the security problems. Of course, security measures are not enough. We must also approach them in many different, from many different angles, especially in the Bekaa and also in Tripoli. We must address the economic, social issues which feed the security problems. Let's really, really, truly prepare for the presidential electoral term.
Well, you've been watching the speech of the Secretary General of the Lebanese Resistance Group, Hezbollah, Said Hassan Nasrallah, speaking out of southern Lebanon, of course addressing the situation, current situation inside of Lebanon and also in Syria.